Let us live in joy, never hating those who hate us. Let us live in freedom, without hatred, even among those who hate. Let us live in joy, never falling sick like those who are sick. Let us live in freedom, without disease, even among those who are ill. Let us live in joy, never attached among those who are selfishly attached. Let us live in freedom, even among those who are bound by selfish attachments. Let us live in joy, never hoarding things among those who hoard. Let us live in growing joy like the bright gods. Conquest breeds hatred, for the conquered live in sorrow. Let us be neither conqueror nor conquered, and live in peace and joy. There is no fire like lust, no sickness like hatred, no sorrow like separateness, no joy like peace. No disease is worse than greed, no suffering worse than selfish passion. Know this and seek nirvana as the highest joy. Health is the best gift, contentment the best wealth, trust the best kinsman, nirvana the greatest joy. Drink the nectar of the Dharma in the depths of meditation and become free from fear and sin. It is good to meet the wise. Even better to live with them. But avoid the company of the immature if you want joy. Keeping company with the immature is like going on a long journey with an enemy. The company of the wise is joyful, like reunion with one's family. Therefore, live among the wise, who are understanding, patient, responsible, and noble. Keep their company like the moon moving among the stars. We all desire happiness and freedom. It is an innate part of what it is to be human. Our perception of what can bring us joy is shaped by the conditions we are born into. Our world celebrates material success, power, influence, the family unit. These we are given to believe will bring recognition, acceptance, long-lasting happiness. The scriptural narrative of the Buddha's early life relates how Prince Siddhartha, as he was then, viewed his wealth, family, sporting prowess, a gilded future, as a precarious edifice that would be subject to change, would not bring him the ultimate happiness and freedom he desired. Siddhartha's vision of the four sights, old age, sickness, death, and a holy man, it led the young prince to let go of material comforts and tribal expectations and go forth into the homeless life in a quest for what can give substance and meaning to our lives. And I too, before awakening, being liable to birth because of self, sought was likewise liable to birth because of self, being liable to aging, disease, dying, sorrow, and impurity, sought what was likewise liable to aging, disease, dying, sorrow, and impurity. Then it occurred to me, why do I, being liable to all these things myself, seek after them? Why don't I, liable as I am to birth, aging, decay, dying, sorrow, and impurity, seek the unborn, the unaging, the undecaying, the undying, the sorrowless, the pure, the utmost security from the bonds, nirvana? That's a quote from the middle discourse of the Pali Canon. Freedom from hatred, the disease of ignorance, and selfish attachment speaks of the potential all of us have to discover joy and freedom within ourselves. The Buddha was born as we are born. What the Buddha overcame, we too can overcome. What the Buddha attained, we too can attain. The Threefold Puja. In every moment, we have a choice in how we respond to pleasant, painful, or neutral feelings. We can respond with greed or hatred, grasping what we desire, pushing away what we don't want. A continuum of delusion in the false view that we have a separate, fixed, identifiable I, and that by bringing into being favourable conditions, we can find eternal joy. Or we can witness our suffering or happiness as a transient event that arose from certain causes. And when these conditions change, will cease to be. The Buddha taught that all worldly phenomena is impermanent, insubstantial, unsatisfactory. The cause of our suffering is that we are blind to this. This being that becomes. From the arising of this, that arises. This not being, that does not become. From the ceasing of this, that ceases. The teaching of cause and effect, or conditioned co-production, is the basic tenet on which we, as human beings, have the capacity to evolve. The circumstances we are born into are the fruits of skillful or unskillful actions of previous lifetimes. And the intention behind every manifestation of body, speech, and mind will have an effect on ourselves and on others, whether that's skillful or unskillful intentions. Our six senses, including the mind, the house with five windows and a door in the Tibetan Wheel of Life, facilitate the daily minutiae of catching a bus, eating lunch, switching on the washing machine. And sense contact will in turn lead to feeling, the next link in the nidana chain, symbolised by the man with an arrow in his eye. Feeling is unavoidable, part of the conditionality of this lifetime. instinctively we react, reinforcing familiar patterns of attachment to I by grasping or avoidance, resulting in the next link in the nidana chain, becoming. And so the snake, cock and pig, embodiments of our aversion, selfish attachment and false views, drive us yet again round the wheel of samsara to another rebirth. At the point of feeling, we can turn towards our experience with wisdom and compassion, as we would turn towards a dearly loved friend, which in a sense we need to be to ourselves. Fully present to the moment, a beautiful sunset, the anguish of loss, and at one with that experience, there arises what Sangharakshita refers to as the response of what is ultimate in us to what is ultimate in the universe. In a word, faith or Shraddha. The poet Fernando Pessoa. Calm because I'm unknown, and myself because I'm calm. I want to fill my days with wanting nothing from them. For those whom wealth touches, gold irritates the skin. For those on whom fame blows, life fogs over. On those for whom happiness is their sun, night will fall. But those who hope for nothing are glad for whatever comes. Placing our hearts upon the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha is a complete reorientation of our whole selves towards our highest spiritual aspirations. Even in the early stages of our journey, this can be liberating. How many of us have gone home after a meditation class, festival day, or weekend retreat, and felt a lightness, freedom, expansiveness, as if part of us had been reborn? My first retreat in December 1996 in Sibford, Oxfordshire, was like being given a priceless gift. The freedom to arrive in my own being, without any agenda, moved by the kindness, generosity, and commitment of the team who gave their time and energy to leading the 10 days. Taking on the positive precepts of loving kindness, generosity, contentment, skillful communication, mindfulness, we build bridges that connect us with the joys and sorrows of others. A shared experience that binds and strengthens. Faith is like the breath that is always with us. We just need to reconnect with it if we lose sight of meaning and purpose in our lives. Growing faith leads to joy, rapture, calm, bliss, an ever-deepening connection with the three jewels, with what is permanent, substantial, and satisfactory. The poet David White describes joy as the sheer intoxicating beauty of the world, inhabited as an edge between what we previously thought was us and what we thought was other than us. When the late Urgyen Sangharakshita started leading meditation and Dharma classes in London in the late 1960s, little could he have known that his vision for a new Buddhist movement would evolve into a worldwide community whose point of reference is the centrality of going for refuge, indifferent to wealth, class, education, or nationality, seeing only individual potential. We can change the narrative of our lives at any point, irrespective of circumstance. Watching the DVD of the Dharma Brothers, a group of lifers in an American jail, who seized the opportunity to live in joy and freedom, although they had little chance of being released from prison, I was moved to tears. Meditation teachers brought the Dharma into their midst, gave some of them the opportunity to be as close as they could be to retreat conditions for a few days. And when a change of management stopped meditation classes for a while, they continued their practice discreetly. One of the men, imprisoned for murder, spoke how, when learning that his own daughter had been murdered, had responded not with hatred, but with compassion. In his heart and mind, where it really mattered, he discovered how it felt to be free. Hatred can never put an end to hatred. Love alone can. This is an unalterable law, the Dhammapada. The cultivation of metta is the antidote to hatred. Loving kindness enfolds every aspect of sila or morality and is the seed from which we flower and grow. Love is affirming, life-giving. When metta meets with suffering in ourselves or other sentient life, karuna or compassion arises. Hearing of someone else's good fortune, metta becomes mudita or sympathetic joy, a caring regard for the well-being of others. Practicing the metta bhavana on and off the cushions, our reactive tendencies can be reined in. A gradual identification with all life, in happiness and sorrow, a place of equanimity or upeksha. A quote from the Karaniya Metta Sutta, a discourse on divine love. As a mother watches o'er her child, her only child, so long as she doth breathe, so let him practice unto all that live, an all-embracing mind. Hate builds walls, loving kindness dismantles them. Who could forget the jubilant scenes when the Berlin Wall came down in 1989? A country reunited, despite cultural and financial disparities, has grown and prospered. Likewise, the Good Friday Agreement that saw the security border between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic dismantled. Both of these are powerful symbols of hatred and division, which through collective goodwill cease to be. Conquest breeds hatred, for the conquered live in sorrow. Let us be neither conqueror nor conquered, and live in peace and joy. There is no fire like lust, no sickness like hatred, no sorrow like separateness, no joy like peace. Peace and joy can only prevail if we learn to love ourselves and treat ourselves with tenderness and understanding, recognizing where we have overcome our own hurdles. My first Mitra convener, Vimalachitta, once said to me, "Buddhism will never reject you, but you may reject yourself." Commitment to the Three Jewels was never in doubt, but I doubted my capacity to give, reach out to others. During communication exercises, whilst on retreat at Taraloka, I was paired with someone I knew had personal difficulties. Metaphorically, I held her with every ounce of love and compassion available. A few weeks later, I asked to become a Mitra. Only we can dismantle our own inner Berlin walls. Let us live in joy, never hoarding things among those who hoard. Let us live in growing joy, like the bright gods. No disease is worse than greed, no suffering worse than selfish passion. Know this and seek nirvana as the highest joy. Generosity breeds generosity. When we give of ourselves. Validate our connections. Create something bigger than ourselves. On festival weekends, the London Buddhist Centre used to leave a rail of clothing outside their charity shop with a sign, "Free. Please help yourself." Some customers would call in and ask, "Really?" Donations to the shop would often follow from these same customers. One of the joys of my spiritual journey has been studying the Dharma, hearing talks, attending study days, and so on. Shortly before I was ordained, Sinhadakini, the women's Mitra convener, asked what I would like to do after joining the order. No hesitation. In January this year, my dear friend Suryadarshini and I met this heartfelt wish when we began co-leading Dharma study for Mitras. Exploring the Buddha's teachings, looking to inspire in others confidence, fearlessness, the courage to challenge long-held views or habits, giving time to practice, friendship, all of this and much, much more is part of the vision that sustains my practice. The poet David White. Joy is the act of giving ourselves away before we need to or are asked to. Joy is practiced generosity. To feel a full and untrammeled joy is to have become fully generous. Personally, I will always be grateful to the early pioneers in Sri Ratna's history For without their unbounded generosity and fortitude, it is entirely possible that we would not be here this evening. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. Health is the best gift. Contentment, the best wealth. Trust, the best kinsman. Nirvana, the greatest joy. Going forth into homelessness may not be a viable option today. A robe, shaven head, or kazer in themselves do not lead to enlightenment, to freedom. But a life of stillness, simplicity, and contentment can open our eyes to what we really need, as opposed to what we would like. Retreats are a wonderful example of letting go of the add-ons that seem indispensable to living, especially technology. Away from the stress of information overload, time slows down. Colours are magnified. Awareness of the smallest details comes into focus. Returning home, we can bring some of the benefits of this into our non-retreat lives by simplifying our possessions, turning off the radio and staying away from eBay. It's astonishing how this can free our time. The lighter we travel, the freer we travel. And over the past 20 plus years, I have come to realise how much baggage has been carried. Past hurts, shelves of books long since or never likely to be read, and an attachment to letters from those I will probably never contact again. The Zen poet Ryokan. Nothing satisfies some appetites, but wild plants ease my hunger. Free of untoward desires, all things bring me pleasure. Tattered robes warm frozen bones. I wander with deer for companions. I sing to myself like a crazy man, and children sing along. Amanda's beautiful talk on the chapter on flowers highlighted the Buddha's compassionate response to the sufferings of the world, with the image of the lotus flowers partially submerged. We are blessed as never before with the availability of the Buddha's teachings, but we can only communicate the Dharma to the extent that we own our own truth. We can only live in joy, free ourselves from greed, hatred, and delusion, if we come to know what is real and authentic within us. Our vulnerability can become our staunchest ally, because this helps to bring all parts of ourselves into the fold, little by little, clearing the dust from our eyes. Long before I was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, I struggled with naming thoughts, feelings, recognizing the subtle social signals most take for granted. Sometimes I feel wholly inadequate to the task of fulfilling my ordination vows, to flourish as a Dharma trainee, a Dharma farer, for the benefit of all. Yet it is my responsibility to maximize strengths and meet the struggles in communicating or understanding with creativity, honesty, wisdom, acceptance, and a dollop of humour. Better than a speech of a thousand vain words is one thoughtful word which brings peace to the mind. The Dhammapada. The explosion of social media over the last few years. It has brought benefits such as free Buddhist audio and the availability of Skype calls. The shadow side is that the intermediary of a screen rather than direct contact with a human being can divorce us from human empathy, the stark and imaginative recognition of the effect our communication may have, especially through widespread channels such as Facebook. Truth and transparency can be watered down or lost, for there is not that immediate human response. The Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh has described again and again the joys and freedom of mindfulness. Joy and peace are the joy and peace possible in this very hour of sitting. If you cannot find it here, you won't find it anywhere. The breath can be a way of bringing us back to our body, heart center, gathering our thoughts from wherever they have wandered off to. The practice of doing nothing is indeed a practice, for habitually we seek something to occupy our thoughts and our mind. Mindfulness practice teaches us how to be in the present moment, just to feel the breath going in and out and the sensations of temperature and touch. An empty day without events, and that is why it grew immense as space. And suddenly, happiness of being entered me. I heard in my heartbeat the birth of time, and each instant of life, one after the other, came rushing in like priceless gifts. Anna Swear's beautiful poem speaks of the happiness of being alive to each moment. There are times when the ghosts of past unskillfulness rise up within me, but these are manageable, and with a vision which brings meaning to each waking morning, the future is less of a preoccupation than it was, say, 30 years ago. Even so, there are times when the next retreat is anticipated, or anxiety can emerge prior to an awkward meeting. But life is the present moment. It is good to meet the wise, even better to live with them. But avoid the company of the immature if you want joy. Keeping company with the immature is like going on a long journey with an enemy. The company of the wise is joyful, like reunion with one's family. Therefore, live among the wise, who are understanding, patient, responsible, and noble. Keep their company like the moon moving among the stars. The company of those who share our vision creates a context to experience ourselves fully. The Sangha brings us into contact with Buddhists of diverse backgrounds and ages, whom we may otherwise never have met. The five precepts are the tools with which we overcome differences, misunderstandings, reconciling temperaments markedly different to our own. The truest friendships I've known have all involved working through difficult communication at some point. For friendship brings us up against what is tender, fragile, those ouch moments. Going on the post-ordination retreat was like reconnecting with my family. Such was the life-changing experience of spiritual death and rebirth on our ordination retreat. Yet on occasions, the company of many I have worked with, befriended, or been related to has felt like being trapped in a maze with no exit. Early on, I learnt to separate off and hide parts of myself at school and home. Fear and insecurity, the common currency. Certainly not freedom. A mature, responsible, noble community extends its reach with meditation classes in schools and prisons, cafes, yoga workshops, and a forum for the arts. The Karuna Trust, funding social projects for those in need, tells its own story of what can be achieved with combined energies and will. Whilst we view the conditioned as the unconditioned and live accordingly, we will continue to suffer. Meditation, the development of loving kindness and awareness, helps us connect with our pain and joy. Fleeting glimpses of just being, moving beyond grasping and turning towards our experience. Our emotions and our imaginal faculty capture a brief insight into how our lives can change. Faith is our North Star, always with us, pointing the way to freedom. To close, the poet David White. To allow ourselves to be joyful is to have walked through the doorway of fear. The dropping away of the anxious, worried self felt like a thankful death itself. A disappearance, a giving away, overheard in the laughter of friendship. The vulnerability of happiness felt suddenly as a strength, a solace, and a source. The claiming of our place in the living conversation, the sheer privilege of being in the presence of a mountain, a sky, or a well-loved familiar face. I was here, and you were here, and together we made a world.